If at any point you can't hear me, just kind of raise your hand. My voice has never been a big voice and doesn't project well, and since the hurricane it's even worse, so I'm not sure what all that's about. But anyway, Isaiah 41, if you look at chapter 40, verse 31, just preceding it, that's our motto for our little Christian school. The chapel in Slidell operates a Christian school and a Christian daycare. Its pioneer work began as a Bible study, 1975. And everyone there, we just finally have our first second generation Christian. So everybody there has been saved out of the world. They have a real burden for souls. And so just about everything that goes on, we've got school, a daycare, five track racks in the hospitals and places around town. We work with a crisis pregnancy help center, work with two gospel rescue missions, and do lots of outreach. We see a lot of souls saved every year, and that's kind of what we're about down there. We call it in-your-face evangelism. And all of our people, they just don't know any better than to witness, and so they do it a lot, and so we see a number of souls saved. Well, anyway, this little verse is a theme for our school. But they that wait upon the Lord will renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings like eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint. I've read that a lot of times. I have it over my desk as we've come through this past year, and it's been an encouragement to me. And one day early, I was just reading the area around it, and I came across verse in chapter 41, verse 10. And it's been just a huge encouragement to me, and maybe you can use it in your life too. It's just a little one of those nuggets. And I felt the day that I read this that it was just God talking to me. And I know the rest of you are around, but it was just him and me that day. So verse 10 of chapter 41 says, "Fear thou not, for I am with thee." We're going to get through this. "Fear thou not, for I am with thee. Be not dismayed, for I am thy God. I will strengthen thee, yea, I will help thee, yea, I will uphold thee with the right hand of my righteousness." Some of the things that I got out of that verse and that we've found as we've gone through this storm, the first one is that our God is huge. Sometimes we think things in this world are huge, but there's nothing in this world as big as our God. And consequently, there's nothing in this world that he can't help us overcome. The very worst this world can dish out is to kill us, and then we're in heaven. That's a win-win deal. So the devil thinks that he's got the upper hand. He's not even a fly speck on the wall compared to our God. Our God is a contemporary song. Our God is an awesome God, and that's really what he is. And we've seen that as we've come through this storm over and over and over again. This huge God intervening in miraculous ways. I had my house going back together. The walls were in, and I thought it was really great. And then we had electrical troubles, and nothing in the house worked. And a young man from Wisconsin showed up who just happened to be an electrician. I couldn't have planned it. I didn't know that I was going to have electrical problems. But God did. Our God is huge. Another man came down, a home inspector, and he called and asked me what he could do, and I said, "Well, you know, I'm not sure we need a home inspector. We can pretty well tell things are a mess without it." Well, he said, "I just feel like God wants me to come down." And so he came down. He had a moisture meter and asked me, would it help to bring a moisture meter? This is houses that had 8 feet of water in them. "I don't think we need a moisture meter, brother." I can tell we're moist already. As he was leaving the house, he decided, well, he hadn't used it in like 10 years. He hadn't used it since he bought it. And he'd just throw it in. Well, it turned out to be the tool that we needed to get our houses back together. Wood, when you buy it at the store, is like 18% dampness. We didn't need it to tell how wet we were, but we needed it to tell how dry we were becoming. And so as we would clean these houses out, we'd stick them with this meter every day and watch the level of the moisture go down. And when it got down to 18%, we knew we were as good as if we bought the timber from the lumber yard. Well, our God is huge, see?
He knew he needed that. He brought a man from Minneapolis, Minnesota with a moisture meter to slide out Louisiana just because he knew we were going to need that. We've got this huge drug. And he chooses to use the foolish things of this world to confound the wise. No offense to you, but we're the foolish things of this world. And the common question is, why does he let Christians go through these things? Well, we go through them because, you know, if we can go through them, other people watch and see how we go through them, and they decide whether they want our God or not based on how they watch us. We have 85% of our population belongs to the big church. And they have their idols and beads and all of these things. But when the storm came, the churches were destroyed. The priests headed for high ground, for after all, they're just hirelings, you know. And the evangelical churches came in and made it work. And they watched as ordinary little people came and did what they could do. And had an incredible testimony for Christ. My friend that belongs to some Hebrew Christian fellowship thing went down to a local university before the storm, spent all day there, got spat upon, kicked, things thrown at him. At the end of the day, he came home with his case of Bibles less one. That's what you get in South Louisiana with the gospel. After the storm, we've given out, I don't know how many cases of Bible, maybe 10 cases, 20 cases of Bibles since the storm. People are eager. See, there's something about you foolish people. We may not agree with it, but you've got something that we don't have. And God uses the foolish things of the world. We also learn the value of people over things. Things can go away in an instant. If anyone had asked us if we love the world or the things in it, we'd have said, no, no way. We're Christians, you know. But you do. You know, you like your house and you like your things. A lady spends her whole life making a nice home for her family, and overnight it just goes away. You come back to knee-deep mud, dead fish, dead animals, stuff. And that's a sad thing. But when you lose a person, that's even worse. People are the most important thing, way over things. And as we knew everyone had gotten out, but we didn't know if they were alive. And as they would come back, you can see it's so tender. We'd meet in the parking lot of the chapel. The chapel became the hub. It was our KOA. We had 10 trailers there at one point in time. People in tents, people sleeping on pews. And when we'd meet in the parking lot of the chapel. And when you finally saw somebody, didn't matter if you knew they were alive or not, but when you saw for the first time, always threw your arms around each other and hugged and cried. Because that soul, that body, that person is worth way more than the stuff. You can replace stuff, but you can't replace people. And the last little lesson in it all was that the only permanent thing in this world is a soul. And the people who died, thousands of them, the people who died were not just people. They were souls. And souls that will go into, in most cases, a Christless eternity. And we were a pretty driven chapel before the storm. But since the storm, it's driven beyond anything you can imagine. Our worship meeting was running 2 hours. We've held it back, where most of the time it runs about an hour and a half now. Prayer meeting last the other night, we're having a particular problem at home. I won't go into that, but it's a serious problem. We may have to shut some ministries down because of it. And Wednesday night, we start our prayer meeting at 6:30. It ran until after 9 o'clock. Men and women on their knees, just praying. That's no ministry. That's just praying. Souls are the most important thing there is in this world. And there's a lot of them that need Christ. We have Christ. And frankly, we don't do a very good job of getting him out. I'm not sure. I wish we did it better. You maybe do it better up here than we do. But since the storm, we're even more driven than before. And I just encourage you, thank the Lord that this didn't happen up here, but it could. My little wife, she says, notice how these disasters are moving around the country. It's like, you know, the Lord taps us on the shoulder in South Louisiana, but the people up north can say, well, I'm glad it's down there and not up here. and then we have a mudslide, or we have a tornado, I don't know what the Lord is doing, but I do know that almost every part of this country, almost every part of this world has been touched in some way. I can hear his footsteps at the door. I think he's that close. Our time is very, very limited in this world. And thankfully, we had lives to go on with the gospel after this hurricane happened. But after he returns, we won't have a chance anymore. The curtain will be pulled, and that'll be the end of it. So what I've got is I've got two PowerPoint presentations. This is the pro and con of technology. We did get it working. Thank you, Floyd. And I'll show you. The first one is I didn't have a digital camera. That's too technical for me. I had a film camera. But after the storm, you couldn't get film, and you couldn't get it developed if you could get it. So anyway, people that came sent me their pictures. So none of these are mine. These are put together from other people, men that came. And it'll give you a little example of just our little part of the pie. And then a second one that's an automated one that's fairly quick. But our police chief did a thank you presentation to send to all the churches and told us to share it with others who shared with us, who shared with them. In the final scene in it, you'll see a skeleton sitting on the windowsill with a sign that says, waiting on FEMA. And then the other part of the, no offense if there's a FEMA person here. The other half of the screen says, we don't need FEMA, we don't need the government, we have the churches. And that's from a non-Christian, the testimony that the believers had as we went through this storm. The churches were the means of getting back on track. It still is going on today. Still is going on today. All different denominations, folks that we normally wouldn't do, have much in common with. But in a thing like this, all of that goes away and everybody just rolls up their sleeves and tremendous testimony. I had just a quick story. I was carrying junk out of my house and a van pulled up in front and the door slid open. There was about four or five young people and a middle-aged man. And the guy in the back said, can we help you with anything? I said, well, I'm pretty much doing okay. I think I'm getting there. He said, well, could you use an MRE, meal ready to eat? I said, no, we've got some of those. He said, how about some water? I said, no, I'm really pretty well fixed. He looked at me and he said, how about if we pray with you? I said, now that I can use. They all climbed out of the van, and I said, listen, I'm a Christian, and I really appreciate you praying with me. He said, well, we're from the ABC XYZ church in somewhere in Ohio or somewhere. This is our pastor. We're just down trying to help. In the middle of the street, they all put their arms around me. They were great. There was no electricity. There was no water. There was no gas. There was no anything. But that day, we communicated with the God of the universe. And I'll tell you, it was tremendous. Now, they really helped, much more than water or food would have ever helped. So a lot of little people. Now, I'm a Christian. Can you imagine if this was a non-Christian? I mean, I could feel the love coming all the way from Ohio or Cincinnati or wherever they were from. So that's the kind of thing went on. This is the idea here is a thank you to you folks. Some of you came. Some of you gave. Many of you prayed. Maybe all of you prayed. We really appreciate that. Now we'll see if this will work. Oh, there they are. That's us. That's pre-Katrina us. The guy told me the other day, he said, Bob, he said, you look terrible. I don't know. This is Ray Cummings from Lake Park Chapel. He's the elder down there. This was one of the meetings that I worked with through the storm. They were not hurt too bad. That's the meeting where Vernon Schlieff is from. Some of you may know him. This is Sandra and Ricardo Pellis. He's an elder with Sala Evangelica, the Spanish meeting in New Orleans. This whole different situation with them. Most of our people lost homes. Most of the Spanish folks were renters, and so they got out with the clothes that were on their back. Their places were destroyed, but they didn't have to go back and rebuild. So mainly it was getting them clothed and resupplied with things to get their lives going back together. This is Scott and Kathy Leach from Central Bible Chapel, Millbrook, Alabama. Scott helped coordinate manpower and finances. There were no banks. There were no... you couldn't use a check, you couldn't use a credit card, so people would send money. He would sign my name. He would sign my name, cash the check, and bring down bags of dollar bills. And I carried bags of dollar bills, $100 bills, around in my truck with a .38 caliber revolver. There were no police department either. This is James and Shorty Bonner from Needham, Alabama. He coordinated materials and supplies, and he'd get them positioned for me. He'd bring them into our little camp, and then we'd distribute them out from the camp. We had two storehouses, one at camp, about 40 miles away, and then one in our fellowship hall. So we could go out and get neighbors and friends, bring them in. They needed food and clothes and shoes and socks and underwear and tissues and things, and we could bring them in. They could shop, get whatever they wanted for free. These were two other area chapels that I didn't work with. They handled their own recovery. And then these were other Deep South assemblies that helped us. And over 160 volunteers and untold prayer warriors. This is Katrina. This is one day out. She was a beautiful storm. It's a beautiful thing. One of the wonders of nature. This is the Yucatan Peninsula down here. This is the Gulf Coast, Florida Peninsula. Just about filled the whole Gulf of Mexico. Look at a beautiful eye. This is from inside the eye. This is a Hurricane Hunter, C3 Orion. Again, from inside the eye. She's a beautiful storm. These are some of the cloud bands. She was no lady. This is our area. Here's Slidell. This is Lake Pontchartrain. This is the toe of Louisiana. This is Lower Plaquemine Parish down here. And Gulf of Mexico, and this is an opening into Lake Pontchartrain. The storm came up over Lower Plaquemine Parish, right over the top of Slidell. Here's Bay St. Louis, Gulfport, Biloxi, Pascagoula. Everything virtually from New Orleans to Pascagoula is destroyed. That's the path there. Coming in over Lower Plaquemine, right over Slidell. It had sustained, this is from our National Weather Service located in Slidell before the storm. It's gone now. This was their figures. They're modifying the figures now. And we don't know exactly why, but supposedly it had sustained winds of 176 for 6 hours, gusts over 196. Storm surge in Slidell at 26 feet. The Gulf Coast had 34 feet. 85 to 90% of all homes and businesses in Slidell were either severely damaged or destroyed. Most powerful storm ever to enter the Gulf of Mexico until Rita, which followed it, and it was even stronger, and it was the largest disaster ever to affect the United States. It's a little education on the storm. As the storm comes in, the counterclockwise winds blow water into Lake Pontchartrain. That water piles up and puts pressure on the levees of New Orleans. In this case, they didn't break it this time. They waited until after the storm passed, but normally the plan is, or the theory is, it'll build up water, breach the levees, and flood New Orleans. They call it overtopping. Then as the storm moves north, the wind shifts around and piles that water from the south shore onto the north shore and puts a wall of water over Slidell. In this case, it did that, and then when the water sloshed back, it breached the levees in New Orleans. This is New Orleans. And here's Slidell. This is a little opening called the Rigolets that opens from the Gulf of Mexico into Lake Pontchartrain. This is Waveland, Mississippi as the storm comes in. This is Highway 90 right here. Coast Highway. Normally the water would be way out here. See the waves coming in. That's the wall of water coming in. This is from the second floor of St. Stanislaus School in Waveland, Mississippi. That's a 34-foot wall of water. And then look at the waves on top of that. Now, I'm telling you, if you were taking this picture, you'd be thinking, what in the world am I doing here? We have another friend who watched it come into Slidell. They said, all of a sudden, the sky just got black. And they thought, what is this? And they looked up, and it wasn't the sky at all. It was this wall of water coming. It's all mud. You can see how dark it is. It's all churned up. This is the I-10, exit 13. Bay St. Louis, Kiln, Waveland, exit. This is cheating. I actually took it after the storm. You can see the pole down, this gas station, motel, all this is destroyed. But just to kind of give you an idea, this is this exit that it looked like before the storm. That's after the storm passed. This is about 5 miles from the coast. This water is up on the I-10 bridge overpass. This is coming in northern Alabama and Mississippi. This is what you saw. It was still a Category 3 when it went through Memphis, they tell me. Down trees, these are love bugs. This is coming into camp. One of the early people came in and cut the way into camp. Cut telephone wires, power lines with chainsaws. This is the only way to get... This is a crew from Reedsville, by the way. They were in there. Look at the fans all. You can tell which way the direction of the wind is. Begin a new day up there. That was kind of where the volunteers would live, to leave the scene and get some normality. This is our central supply at the camp. This is all things people sent in. Paper goods and canned foods. And the ladies would go up and segregate it into types of materials. And then they bring truck carloads down to Slidell, where we could bring people to get it. And then as we used it, we'd go back up to camp, maybe two or three trips a week to camp, bringing stuff down for people. This road crew's working. Trees. I think Slidell lost 90,000, 60,000 trees. This is a typical street scene in Slidell. 80% or better have been lost. This is stuff that's been hauled out of this business here. This is a pine tree of arborist from Charlotte, North Carolina came down, and he said he's never seen this taproot in pine trees broken before. He said typically a storm will snap off a pine tree, but it won't break that taproot. The taproot goes way down in the ground, and in this storm those taproots were just broken like toothpicks. Some patriotism still intact. This is one of our family's house next door here. This tree, we cut it off, but it came up here and a limb had gone through their house. But look at on this end, now here's the other end. These are like 100-foot pine trees. They cut your house in half like a hot knife to butter. It's really unbelievable. Where do you start with that? These are houses in our neighborhood. The rubble is so deep you can't hardly get to the houses. This is a oak, I think. These are all our neighbors. This is the house with the flag. You see the car in there? See if you can see the car. There he is. This happened to my daughter's Kia Sportage. This isn't hers, but it was like this. And the boys, her kids, after a while thought, I wonder if that thing still runs. One of them crawled through the window, got in, started it up, and sure, it ran. Kia sent a photo team out to take pictures of this thing to use for advertising. Well, later on, they got in and they cut the tree off the top of it, and her neighbor said, what are you going to do with that thing? She said, I don't know, just throw it away, I guess. He said, can I buy it? She said, you can have it. He cut the top off of it, and it's running around Gulfport today. What a great ad for a car. This is what these piles look like. This is my house here. This sign, I don't know if you can read it, it says, you lose, I shoot. There was no law. Our parish president, when we finally got radio stations back on the air, WWL Radio is called the voice of New Orleans. And the cutesy little saying has always been, when they go off the air, New Orleans is gone. Well, they went off the air. And they started broadcasting from Baton Rouge. All the radio stations went off the air. Their towers went down. They moved to Baton Rouge and broadcasted as United Radio Broadcasters of New Orleans. And our parish president came on and he said, listen, if you're going to loot, don't come to St. Tammany Parish because my citizens have permission to shoot you. And if you loot, we will shoot you. And so we had very little, although a man broke into his house and he had to back him out with a 12-gauge shotgun under the guy's nose. This is a block from my house. This is my neighbor's house. Three trees through the roof. It's still the same today. The trees are gone. The roof is caving in. The furniture's not yet been taken out. And it's just sitting there molding. This is my neighbor on the other side. This is the Captain Danny Milan. You'll see him later. He runs the police academy in Slidell. And this is the back of his house, back of my house here, back of his house. This tree has cut his back end of his house in half. In fact, this week, a Christian bricklayer, a friend of mine, just rebricked the back of his house. And, he had an estimate. He got an estimate from my bricklayer friend. So, when it's all said and done, my bricklayer friend is going to tell him, well, the Lord took care of it. So, he'll get his brick replaced, you see. This is my house. One of many piles that I had. This is the beginning of the first one. This is early on. This tree just missed. Before we left town, we prayed in the driveway that the Lord would take care of our house and our boat and our friends. And, he really did an amazing job of just missed our house. This one didn't miss. Took this corner off and, this part of the roof over here and poked holes in the roof. We had 2 feet of water. It would have been up about here. I had a little row of, every family got 17 sandbags. And the first time I've gotten them, I got them and I put them out here like, keep the water from blowing under the door, you know. When they came back, these little sandbags like soldiers out there, we tried. This is a team from Reedsville. They came down, they brought, chainsaws, and they're cutting up these trees in my backyard. And, Cecil Cottrell, I don't know if anybody knows him. These Marines are just back from the Middle East, hadn't been home yet. And, they were coming through, they do rotate duty. Half of them are on duty patrolling the streets with guns. The other half are going house to house seeing if they can help. And Cecil went out and he said, you guys like chocolate chip cookies? And he said, oh yeah. He said, well, if you'll help, we'll give you chocolate chip cookies. And, so they traded the work for the chocolate chip cookies. So they really worked. A few young guys can do a lot more than a bunch of fat old men. Yeah. This is the inside of my house. This is our living room. Oh, this is my living room. This is our hallway, my office. This is our dining room. We were just finishing remodeling the house. The Lord had other plans. You see, the water's still in it. We came back, there's probably still 5 or 6 inches of water. You couldn't even get in to Slidell. The storm came in at 6 o'clock Monday morning, and you couldn't get into Slidell except by boat until Wednesday. Somebody have a question? This is my office. Our front entryway, this picture window, we boarded it up, but the tree came through it anyway. This is our kitchen and living room. We were fortunate. We saved a good bit of stuff. All the furniture went, all the cabinets went, the walls went, but we were left with a good bit of stuff. I lost the lower shelf in my library. This is working in the yard. This is when they were done, it was really cleaned up miraculously. It's still full of ruts and holes, and you could break a leg walking in my yard. It's way better than it was. And they took and they thought Joanne needed a pick-me-up, so they raked this area so she could come. She went to the store for charcoal, and they raked this area and mowed it so she would come home to a somewhat civil-looking place, and then they made a barbecue for us. It was really nice. This is a Finney home. It's a big, beautiful home. The bigger the home, the worse the damage. This is a laid wood floor, and you see the planks all coming up. This is mud. They made us a barbecue. We didn't have gas or electric, and the bottle was out, so we went and got some charcoal and cooked us some steaks. I don't know who this little old guy here is. This is on our patio. They cleaned up the patio. This is the Fisher's home. That floor is at 2 feet. The water came within an inch of coming in, but it stayed dry, so that became, for 4 weeks, was kind of our storm central, became our headquarters. These are MREs. This is water. That's what we lived on. Ran with generators. This is my boat. RS2 means it is you. For you it is. Is it you? I didn't want to go look. And, Matt Phelan from Nashville came down. He said, you gotta go look. You gotta have closure. I said, no, it's not even there. I don't want to go look. No, you gotta go look. They finally talked me into going. This is what we were met with when we got out to the marina. Not a lot of hope. This is a highway or a road going through. This is all mud, seagrass. This is what the marina looked like.
Everywhere we looked, I thought, I don't think I want to be out here. His boats are impaled on piling. This is a beautiful boat made in Sweden. Just destroyed. This is all marsh grass. Marsh grass is hanging on the telephone wire. Bass fisherman here. This is a beautiful bass boat. Still on the trailer. Sticking bow up in the air. Broken mast sailboat. There's my boat. It was sitting there like, Brown, where have you been? I've been waiting for you. Had one line broken. We had prayed that the Lord would take care of her. And I thought, that's too much, you know, for the Lord to look after a stupid boat. It's named for him. So I think his name matters. So, there it is. A dismayed Bob. This is saying goodbye to some workers, and what you don't see is the tears that follow after people leave. Tremendous help as they come and help, and then tremendous downside when they leave. This is mid-air refueling. These are search and rescue helicopters right over our house. This went on 24/7. No air traffic control. Very dangerous for these men flying here. And they literally, these are mostly Coast Guard and Marine helicopters. They literally risk their lives extricating people. This is a FEMA line, aid station. While the men worked, the ladies would go get in line. And you'd get in line, you'd open your trunk, you'd pull in, they'd put a case of MREs, a case of water, and a bag of ice in the back of your trunk, and off you'd go. This is a waterfront community on the south side of our town before the storm. That's what's left of it. This is like a bomb going off. People that came and saw it, the common remark was, I can't believe it. It's like a bomb. We're going to take a ride down here like this. This is this section. This is a restaurant. Part of it stayed, but the bottom is all gone. The top of a house from somewhere. Another part of a house. This is what we call a camp. This is a house built out over the water. It's not there. That's the piling for it. It's gone. Not even a 2x4 left. It's another business. This is Science of Jack's open. It's very open. Some of these houses look good, but the bottom floors are gone out of them. The water took water up to the second floor. Boats everywhere except in the water. This is a camp that came over the, this is a road, and it was on the other side of the road on piling, and it just washed over here. More boats. Still trying to get into the garage. There's boats and trucks. This is not a workman's truck. This is a truck that's just been washed in there. Same with the car. None of these are drivable, usable things. They're all washed in here. Same with these trucks and stuff stacked on top of them. You can get the deal on a washing machine. A paddle boat. This is one of two houses that made it through it. We're not sure. It must just really be built. I don't know. This section here. These are stilt houses built on the north shore of Lake Pontchartrain, Slidell. Many of them date back to the 1800s. And before the storm, you'd ask people, doesn't it worry you about hurricanes? And they would say, oh no, this house has been through 100 hurricanes. We don't worry about it. Well, that's what's left. Not a 2x4. This is the I-10 bridge, or what's left of it in the background, going across Lake Pontchartrain. Just the piling. It's a crane. They're working on the I-10 bridge there. I talked to this couple, young couple in their 30s. They had this camp on the North Shore, a house in Chalmette. They lost them both. No insurance on either one. I asked her if they were going to rebuild. She said, no, she's moving to Montana. She said, one too many hurricanes. So, this is the other side of that little road, debris littered. What's left of them? Not even the bugs were spared. somebody's classic car, you know. This is another classic little MG, I think. Stuffed under a trailer. One of our people's trailer park where they live. These X's are search and rescue teams. This is a team, I think it's a 10. Huh? 12, maybe. Team 12, no bodies. I had all of our people take pictures of their X's. I said, if you ever think things are bad, just pull this picture out. You know you're alive. This is all raw sewage, petrochemical. This is a biohazard area. We went in to get our family's stuff out of their trailer. Everything they salvaged didn't fill the trunk of a Toyota. This is the inside of their house. This is what you came home to. The ladies can probably understand this more than us men can, but you can imagine this was some lady's home, and she comes home, and this is what's left of it. This is all mold growing. My daughter called me in tears when we were still in Alabama and said, don't bring Mama home. But Mama wouldn't have it, you know. This is their house again. You see the mold growing. There's the rescue team. Rescue team 10, zero bodies. There were two deaths in there. Not everybody was as fortunate. It's a little duplex. This is a body count of one. This is a body count of one. This has been gone into three different times, it looks like, at least. This is a date, a team, and body counts. It looks like three different, at least three occurrences. One of our, I didn't get a picture of it, but, SPCA came in, they were so worried about animals. Some houses you'd go to and you'd see this, where a person died in there, and then next to it there'd be an X with SPCA, one dog, one cat, two birds. You know, if people put the same value on animals as on human life. This is one of our family's trailers. They lost everything. They lost not only the trailer, but both of these cars were left behind. They were lost. Also his boat. This is the inside. It's Rob Tiviajo. Look at the mold going. This is just shortly after the storm, but it's about 95 degrees, and the mold grows like, oh, little fat gray-haired guy there. We're getting stuff off. It's the only way to get in. Just crawl all over it. So some of the work that went on. To my other elder's house, cutting the trees off of it. I'm stuck. More trees. The thing is stuck a little bit, so we're slowing down. This is a North Carolina guy here, I think from North Raleigh or North Ridge. You'll see some faces here that you probably know. That's also North Raleigh guy. It's another different house, cutting trees off a different house. Chainsaws earned their keep. This is this trailer park, the biohazard. You need to wear gloves and boots and all in there. We didn't do that, but it's the inside of another house. What it looks like after you take the bathroom out. Again, this is all mud and crud. This is my pile again. That's my toilet. Cool, huh? This is the Alfonso house before the hurricane. This is after. This is what the ladies come home to. Everything, when the water comes up, everything floats, and then it just comes down wherever it is. If you're lucky, your refrigerator comes down on its back, or your freezer. If you're not lucky, it comes down on its front, and that way, when you pick it up, it has to open. And we like our shrimp and chicken down that way, and you can imagine what bad chicken and shrimp taste smells like, you know. You throw up instantly. Somebody's piano. All the pictures, all the books. This is all mold growing up. We came across mold that will kill you in one day. This is the Alfonso street, their neighborhood. All of these cars are derelict, been washed in here. Sometimes you don't even know who they are. We ran into one fellow that had a house in his front yard, and he didn't even know who the house was, and his mama, it was his mama's house. And his mama said, well, son, go in and find out whose house it is. No, I don't want to. Probably bodies in there. Well, you got to go. He said he quickly went in, found a magazine, and got a name on address off of it. It was from his neighborhood, but they didn't even know where it belonged. This is a ceiling fan at a vaulted ceiling. This is water in that light fixture. Over 8 feet in the air. This is Lee Sandifer showing the water level in his house. This is dirty work, pulling this stuff all out. One of the men, you can see the sheetrock nails, some of them still left in there. One of our men cut his hand on that. His hand swelled up like a watermelon. He had to go to the hospital and get an IV. Very dirty scene. This is Sharon Sandifer with her pasted-on smile. Not exactly the home she'd planned, but today. Very, very sad. Strong people, trying to be brave. You can see on her face, this is breaking her heart. Sitting in her front yard here. Not even the graves were spared. This is, coffins floated out. This one was open the last time I came by. This time someone had closed it, but you can see the stuff from inside coming out. A crypt here floated over. Here's an open one. There's body and bones and wrappings and all inside. This is what you do. If you find a coffin in your backyard or whatever, you call this number. And I just found out, a guy said there's a tube. And in that tube, you unscrew it and pull the tube out, and it has the information on the person in that tube. I wondered what, you know, if you report it, how do they find where it goes? So it does have some information in the coffin. This is some of the 160 workers. This guy's from North Carolina. Another North Carolina. Glenn Brown from Iowa. Another North Carolina guy. This is a great picture. Look at the care that he's taking to do that sheetrock work. This is not just throwing up sheetrock. This is people who loved us and came and tried to do the very best job they can do to give us our homes back again. This is the Alfonso home going back together again. This is Jim Reams from Spokane, Washington. I think sitting on my tub. Julie's tub. This is Bob Jones from Grace Gospel Chapel in Plumstead, Pennsylvania. This is Josiah Brainerd from Rhinelander, Wisconsin. He quit his job to come down. His boss told him, if you quit, you're not coming back to work for me. He said, that's okay, I have to go. He's 18 years old and came down and stayed almost a year. And his boss called and said, you not only have your job back, you have it back with a raise. I went back up and I performed his wedding, him and his girlfriend, just a month ago. We brought 11 folks from the chapel to Rhinelander, Wisconsin for his wedding. There's Jim Reams, Dwayne Brown from Iowa, Ken Keene from Kansas, and the other guy. Ken and Bob Jones. He came down with long hair, but we didn't have barber shops, and so we operated on a generator with a set of clippers, and Sharon Sandiford was our hair cutter. This is John Nagaris from Long Island, Fred Scott from Muscatine, Iowa, Tim Nelson from Wichita, Kansas, and Josiah. This is our Shasta trailer. Someone donated this Shasta trailer to us, and the volunteers slept in it. Not exactly the best life, but Amos Geske from Wisconsin. This is the two that got married. And then Andrew Williamson from Toronto. And with the exception of Jenny, they're all living in this little Shasta. There's no, on here, Sharon cutting hair. Getting his haircut. And this is another one doing a haircut. This is Rich Negrin from Allentown, Pennsylvania. People from all over the country. Dwayne Brown, he came down, what he said was to lift the load, to take some of the load off of me so I could try to get the school and the daycare open. So he stayed for a month, quit. He's a full-time worker. He canceled all of his ministry for a month and came down to help. This is his rig, bound for heaven and reborn. This is the inside of the chapel. It took about 6 or 8 inches and took the roof off of it. This is the carpet's up. It's the outside. Susan Sapp.